I think the most important thing is find your passion, because everything that turned out to me right now is because I had some amazing teachers who told me what I was good at. And the second thing that happened is anytime somebody made a phone call and said, "Would you do this?" I went, "That sounds interesting. Yes." And it just kind of made a trajectory. I started out, my dad was a superintendent, my mom was a kindergarten teacher. I began in a first grade special needs classroom, and those kids taught me everything there was about life because nothing was in the textbook on teaching. It was follow them and figure it out. And the most important thing I will tell every parent, because the one thing that's if there's a blessing of being on TV, is every time I'm on TV, one of those kids from way back when gives me a phone call. And what they then do, it's absolutely wonderful, is they catch me up on the rest of the class. And
Oh, no
what
way.
you've got to know that I get blown away with is that the kid who was the shyest in the entire class, who never said a word, is one of the most professional, upstanding DAs in Florida. He's unbelievable on what he's doing. My kid, who was the non-stop talker, I always figured oh my God, get some Band-Aids. He net over his mouth. He never stopped talking. The kids would go, "Ms. Borba, he's doing really good. He's a DJ. He's making a fortune." And I went, "All righty then." They had parents who figured out what their children's natural strength was and just filtered it that way and gave them a little nudge and a push. I think that's the advice of advice is be a talent scout for your kids.
Welcome to Parenting Teens Today with Jessie LeBeau. Man, I don't even know where to start with you. There's so much going on. You're all over the place. You're on a move. I'm so glad that we were able to make this happen. And I'm wondering, you've worked with every Fortune 500 company out there. It seems like you've gotten all the awards. You're in all of the media,
Aww.
but I'm sure it didn't start like that. And I'd love just to go back and kind of hear a little bit about before you were doctor and you were just little Michelle or whatever they called you. Could you give us your story growing up and how you
Oh.
get to where you are now?
Well, thank you. And I'm telling you, I think the most important thing is find your passion. Because everything that turned out to me right now is because I had some amazing teachers who told me what I was good at. And the second thing that happened is anytime somebody made a phone call and said, "Would you do this?" I went, "That sounds interesting. Yes." And it just kind of made a trajectory. I started out, my dad was a superintendent, my mom was a kindergarten teacher. I began in a first grade special needs classroom, and those kids taught me everything there was about life because nothing was in the textbook on teaching. It was follow them and figure it out. And the most important thing I will tell every parent, because the one thing that's if there's a blessing of being on TV, is every time I'm on TV, one of those kids from way back when gives me a phone call. And what they then do, it's absolutely wonderful, is they catch me up on the rest of the class. And
Oh, no
what
way.
you've got to know that I get blown away with is that the kid who was the shyest in the entire class, who never said a word, is one of the most professional, upstanding DAs in Florida. He's unbelievable on what he's doing. My kid, who was the non-stop talker, I always figured oh my God, get some Band-Aids. He net over his mouth. He never stopped talking. The kids would go, "Ms. Borba, he's doing really good. He's a DJ. He's making a fortune." And I went, "All righty then." They had parents who figured out what their children's natural strength was and just filtered it that way and gave them a little nudge and a push. I think that's the advice of advice is be a talent scout for your kids
Yeah,
because,
isn't that something to go? And we talk about that all the time of how, like, we feel like there has to be a correlation between success in school and in the classroom and kind of this traditional education system that we have to then going out and being a success in career. But that's so not the case. And how many years did you do that with those kids? Was that one class that you did, or did you do that
Oh
for?
no, I did a number of special needs children. I also did camping with a few of them in during the par during summertime. I taught gifted and talented. So it was all different kinds of formats, and I saw begin to see the same pattern that don't get locked into the kid's DNA or temperament or zip code. It's really a matter of a few skill sets. They always have a caring person someplace in their life, and it's not the parent, it's somebody else. So keep that in mind, parent. Find somebody who believes in your kid, because they're a wonderful mirror to your child. They'll filter it back of, here's what I see in you. The child may not, but somebody's going to be able to be that alternate mirror, and wow, what a difference that can make. And the other thing that I discovered over and over again, I mean, I was dealing with, Jesse, kids whose parents were so abominable. I mean, these were like gang parents, drugs, alcohol, substance abuse, the killings on the streets. And I remember talking to a few kids and I said, how did you make it? And they all said, one girl, we're being raised by the wrong village. I said, I can see that, but how'd you get out of it? These kids were now in high school, graduating, and all had scholarships to a college. I said, what happened? They said, it was the Boys and Girls Club. If it hadn't been for the Boys and Girls Club, of a safe place to go where we could do our homework and somebody would greet us with cookies, we never would have made it. So find a positive place for your kids, because that's the other thing.
That environment is so huge. I love the Boys and Girls Club, and I've gotten to work with them a lot over the years, and they have amazing programs and resources. Yeah. And like you said, that community, that tribe, those people that are going to take an interest and care and push you into those passions.
Yeah.
I just love it.
You know, Jesse, that what happens is I began to do this, fast forward it 40 years, I began to study resilience. And the fascinating thing is, in fact, that the last book I wrote was called Thrivers, on what makes a kid thrive. Look at that. You're my new PR guy. There you go.
Torn pages in here and highlights. You're crazy.
Oh, thank you.
This book is incredible.
Thank you. That was revolutionary, but it was one piece of research, Jesse. It was a piece of research by an incredible woman that you see, Berkeley, who tried to find out, what about kids who don't have the place or the people? What helps them bounce back? She studied a group of 700 children who all of us would have said, that kid's not going to make it. Adversity was so horrific, but she studied them for over 30 years. And about a fourth of the year into it, in fact, during their teen years, she found that she was wrong. She found that despite the adversity in their life, many of them were bouncing back and becoming caring, competent, and confident. Now, what was the correlation? Not only the person. She said the single greatest correlation was somebody in their life who was the caring champion. The second one was the place, like the Boys and Girls Club or your home or the neighborhood. But the third thing was they'd learned protective buffers or skills, not the ABCs and science and math, but you know, how to bounce back, how to overcome the mistake, how to de-stress when the stress is building. She said that's what helped those kids to be able to forge on through, because they could handle the adversity, and many of them made it despite the odds against them.
I love that. I mean, that's the message that I am out there preaching in the school systems, is an underdog, being overlooked, being underestimated, but how can you rise above it and not be a victim, but go out there and make the most of your strengths and do something amazing with your life. So I love anytime I hear a message that correlates with that. And you said these skills that they need, that buffer skills, and these ones that they aren't learning in school, where are they learning them? If they aren't learning them in school, and do you feel like the education system is kind of broken because they aren't taught in school?
Well, unfortunately, it's like a half and half of the haves and the have-nots. There are some extraordinary schools. I visit them daily. I speak at them daily. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's hope for kids. And those are the schools who take on beyond social emotional learning. They're making it very, very, as one kid said, you don't learn empathy on a worksheet. It's a verb, you know. What does that mean? He goes, well, you got to see it and feel it. You got to do it. You know, you can't learn it in a poster.
Yeah, for the
third grader. Third grader. I said, you got something there, buddy. But that's the piece. And they're doing very, very active, glorious things. And they're helping children, particularly teens, find meaning in their life. Kids, I think one of the biggest reasons why that mental health is plummeting is they don't have a sense of purpose and meaning in their life, or they've been driven to, here's what you're going to be, and it's not part of their own thought process of, here's who I am. It's finding, I Jesse, I've interviewed so many kids as part of when I was writing Thrivers, and it just got to be depressing because so many of them told me almost the same thing. We just don't have balance in our life anymore. It's all about what you're supposed to do as opposed to getting through to the balance. I said, "What does balance mean?" He goes, "Well, going to the thing where you think that, like taking the nature walk," or one kid said, "Do you think ukulele is a high enough passion for me?" I said, "Does it give you balance?" He said, "Yeah, it really makes me soothe." I said, "Well, then why aren't you playing it?" He said, "My dad doesn't think it's a high enough goal." I said, "One of the highest correlations, I think parents keep this in mind, of kids who bounce back, this is really interesting. Emmy Warner discovered it. They have healthy hobbies. But I'm talking to university presidents who are really concerned. They said, we're raising a very well-loved group of kids, and they're very, very smart. But they come here and they don't know how to handle their first B plus or a little tiff with their roommate. The skill set is kind of deficit. And so the number one time our kids are most likely to drop out of school their entire life is end of freshman year, first semester of college.
Yeah, they can't handle any type of adversity. Someone just having a different opinion than them, and it's a complete meltdown. And why do you think that is? And what can we do in our kids to prevent this, that they can't handle any speed bumps that come up? Which is
Oh,
life. Life is full of
I
speed
love that concept. Speed bumps is a great word for it
bumps.
because I think that's right on the mark, Leslie. I think the first thing is we got to put a little bit of blame on the pandemic because as a result of it, the kids didn't have the opportunity to be out and practicing like social skills and how to disagree amicably with your friend because they weren't face to face with them. In fact, one of the things that we do know is highly correlated back to Emmy Werner. She discovered what are the traits of a kid who can thrive. Social confidence was highly correlated. Does your kid have time to go out and just be a kid with other kids is a big thing. Or is he doing all the classes or the extra activities when he's in front of a worksheet and he can't relate to the other kid? I think that's one. We're seeing social regression is huge. Behavior regression is another one. We're stressed also, hate to say it, but we parents have never been as stressed, says the Surgeon General who's worried about us. And our stress is filtering down to our kids. So there's a number of reasons for it. And it doesn't happen to the pandemic alone. That Thriver book, when I was trying to figure out what we were going to do with the mental health problem, came out the week of the pandemic. And everybody said, "How did you know this?" I said, "This isn't new. It was prior to the pandemic." What I was trying to find out then was what are the skills and the what I would call character strengths that really do matter most, not only for academic achievement and performance, but also behavior and mental health, and they're teachable. And that's how the book ended up being formatted with seven strengths that matter most.
Yeah, can we touch on those seven strengths? And I got them right here. I can feed them to you, but the first one I know is confidence. And it's like you get this thing. We get it from parents that we talk to all the time. And it's like, it's funny. We got the same message, different messenger. So it's like you told them the same thing I've been telling them for the last year and a half, but for whatever reason, they don't hear it from me, and it comes from someone else. And it's like the most profound, amazing thing. And so we focus on confidence, and I believe that's so much the key to it all. And I'd love to hear kind of how you came to the conclusion and what confidence means to you, and kind of how does
Yeah.
one build confidence? How do you give your kid confidence?
Well, first of all, why I came to it wasn't me. It was looking at scores of the most profound research. And it wasn't just Emmy Werner. It was Anne Mattson, Norm Gurmisi, just so you know, there's people out there that are doing this. Michael Rutter, who were studying kids who overcame. And they almost all came to the same conclusion that one factor that seems to be a commonality is a confidence level where a child believes in themselves. Now, that also means that the child knows what their strengths are, not that they don't have weaknesses. Every kid's going to have a weakness. And it doesn't mean we're going to stop helping them with the math that they're struggling with. But what we discover is that, I know this isn't you, Jesse, this is the neighbor next door, but 66% of the time, we parents focus on our kids' deficits, not their strengths, because we think that's going to help them. And as a result, it kind of tanks them. So, if I was to say anything, if you want a happy kid, I mean, who doesn't? You want a successful person in the real world? University of Chicago says The strength on happiness is figuring out what your kid is good at. And if they know that now, what they'll be able to do is, particularly a teen, be more likely to segue into the college that's going to support that strength, because this is who I am. So that's the key in life, helping your child figure it out. A strength, by the way, you'll see it, and you can take a 3x5 card and just look a little closer and don't let your kid know that you're watching them. But watch to see, when are they a little more tenacious? When are they a little more eager to do the task? When do they learn it a little faster? Or you see a need for it. When you say it's time for art, the kid's whole face and body lights up. So those are areas of strength. And it, again, you find ways to weave that in. I'll never forget Natalie Dalton, over the top. She's now at Notre Dame and she's doing quite well. But I said, Natalie, why aren't you stressed out like the rest of your friends? And she said, oh, I listened to Mozart. And I said, Natalie, I swear that was not what I was listening for. I wasn't expecting you to say Mozart. How'd you figure out it was Mozart that helped you calm down and stay cool? And that's who you love to listen to. She said, my mom, she's really snaky. All during the pandemic, she kept putting on different music over our loudspeaker system. And every time Mozart came in, my whole body would start to decompress. I said, so what did you do? Well, I loaded my iPad up with Mozart. And so every time I'm stressed or I need to find a little bit of, she says, I just listen to him. And my whole body starts to decompress. And I went, brilliant mother,
Yeah.
sneaky, didn't say a thing. But pretty soon her daughter figured out this is what helps me. So maybe that's what
Genius.
we do.
Genius level. Yeah, I'm thinking, I was like, what is mine? I think mine might be Kenny G. Kenny G might
Yeah.
be the one that gets me to relax.
Whatever. It makes no difference what it is, just as long as it helps you soothe, because, that's going to be absolutely essential. We do know that self-control is one of the highest correlations. That's number three, by the way, on the list of what matters. But you got to help your child figure out a way to cope. And if you don't have one, your kid doesn't have one, then you start introducing them as a family. Just be sneaky. Start woodworking, or grandma's going to come over and do some knitting lessons, or you do baking. Find out what resonates with your child. It'll matter the rest of their lives. And if they don't like to be around you, befriend your kid's best friend's mother and
Like,
get together as
smart.
parents.
You got to team up.
And
Yeah, it's too hard.
team
It's
up,
too
boy,
hard.
team up.
Yeah. So, okay, we got confidence. We touched on self-control. Talk to me about empathy. Why is empathy one of the seven that's so important? Because I think I'll let you go, but it is something that I think is overlooked so much, especially when
Yeah.
almost everyone is accusing everyone else of being a narcissist today. Why is empathy so important for kids?
Well, if you go back to all the work on resilience, and resilience, the definition is the kid who can bounce back when the adversity or the challenge comes and keep on going. One of the highest correlations, again, to that bounce back kid is social competence. So social competence doesn't mean he's got 50,000 friends, but it means he can relate with one or two. And one of the core values or skill sets of social confidence is empathy. So you can feel with your buddy. You can feel with the kid on TV whose, house just desecrated because of the flood. It's not sympathy. That's I feel for you. But empathy is I feel with you. The fascinating thing, Jesse, is our kids are hardwired at birth for it. But we're not cultivating it, and the culture is kind of taking it down. So when you say, where do I start? The simplest thing to start is start talking feelings and emotions more with your teen. You can watch the movie Inside Out. You can, as he's reading or she's reading fabulous books, get a hold of what's the book that's being assigned at school to your kid. Get an extra copy of the book. Not that you're going to read it out loud. Your kid's going to be responsible for reading it. That's what you do as a teen. But I remember, I have three boys, and I remember at high school, I got really sneaky, and I always would get an extra copy of the book. I'd read it to myself, and then I'd say, are you guys on page 33? Can you believe what's happening? And the conversations became wonderful. What does that have to do with empathy? York University found that literary fiction, and I'm not talking 50 Shades of Grey, I'm talking All the Light You Cannot See or Bel Canto, or books where you get into the character, wonder. Why is Harry Potter and Wonder the most popular kids' books right now? Because they're really literary fiction. And every kid would say, you're finding out about the other person. I ask middle schoolers, what's the one book that should always, always be assigned? And they come up with The Outsiders. And I'm going, how old is that book? And I said, what do you love about Outsiders? And they say, it's a chance for us to find out by somebody different than us. That's what empathy is. It doesn't mean you agree with them, but you're finding out who they are. And we're living in a very diverse world. And we've got to be able to feel comfortable with, I don't care if it's boy, girl, man, woman, different race, different culture, different religion. Find out about that person. And that's what children's literature and novels do for teens.
I love that. And you know, one thing from talking to a lot of psychologists is we'll have parents ask questions, right? Like this situation, that situation, this is what's going on, affluent area, not affluent area. And one of the patterns that I started to see was one of the recommendations that came up a lot was go and serve other people. Go and give,
Oh.
do some type of thing. And I, as you were talking about empathy, I'm like, I think that's so much of it is because we get so focused on ourselves and like, oh, I don't have the cool new shoes that everyone has or fill in the blank. And you realize when you go out and you give and you help other people that your problems are so ridiculous and you're so lucky to have the problems that you have and that and it helps develop some of that empathy that you're talking about.
Jesse, you're right on the mark. Boom. When I talk to kids, fascinating. First of all, research confirms what you just said.
Okay,
Happier people don't get, they give. It's an interesting thing because we want to keep giving, giving, giving to our kids, when in reality, flip it. They're going to be much less stressed and far more happy when they give. Now, how do you do that? Let me give you a tip on that one. Once again, sneaky mother. I was listening to a kid who was doing a keynote address, absolutely brilliant in high school. And he was a kid who was a giver. He was always doing phenomenal charity and he was trying to get the rest of his friends involved in it. And I finally said, how did you get this way? He was in college at that level. But he said, my mom, she was really sneaky. I said, what did she do? She said, I was really dating at that point. And oh my God, I just love this girl. And I wanted to spend a lot of time with her, you know, it was my senior year in high school. And my mother thought that giving back was really important. But so she said, you got to work at a homeless shelter. I said, I don't have time. I want to be with my girlfriend. You know what my mother did? I said, what? She became best friends with my girlfriend's mother. And then what she did is she and my mother's and my best friend's mom and my girlfriend, we all worked together at the homeless shelter. Now, my mom knew that I was concerned about poverty and homelessness. So she picked what she knew that was driving me. The fascinating thing is, it was the best thing in my life. And he started a little get teary-eyed. I still get teary-eyed listening to him. He says, then I went away to college. And he said, the most amazing thing happened. I said, what? He says, oh God, I love my mother even more. I said, what did your mom do? She's still working at that homeless shelter. I said,
No
oh,
way.
but that's what it is. What did the mom do? Rewind it. She
Sneaky.
found a way to have her kid, a teen in high school, do what he was passionate about. She befriended the girlfriend's mother. They did it all together, but it was one of those things you don't just choose. Let's go to a homeless shelter. She knew that was her son's passion, and she knew that giving back and service isn't because it looks good on a college resume. It's because it's what drives your heart, and it will give you what is, I think, one of the highest correlations also to really thriving. Is what Bill Damon from Stanford would say, finding purpose and meaning. And what that did is find purpose and meaning, and stress goes down and your heart goes up. Do your children have, who am I? What's my purpose or my meaning about life? And it'll take a while, but wow, what a difference it can make.
So huge, such a cheat code. And back to your original point of find the purpose, find the passion, find these things. I love it so much. And I feel like this is something I can attest to personally, and I'm sure you can as well. When you get into a field where you're doing something that helps other people and you get this feedback, it is literally like floating on a cloud and it's better than anything else. I it And I know the times that I've gone through that have been the darkest of times, when I've leaned into focusing on helping other people and not my circumstances and my family's health and the things that I'm going through. I'm safe to say it saved my life. I feel like it has been just an absolute game changer. I love it. So I want
Jesse, teens confirm with right there with you. That's the interesting thing. They may not tell the parent. That's the fascinating thing. They may not come us face to face. But the interesting thing is when you do a focus group, what they do to open up when they don't think they're being graded and anything is okay to say, open to say, finding purpose always comes up.
Yeah. So this next one is one that I feel like is so lacking today. And you see these people that become famous for things that I think a few years back you'd be like, this isn't a good thing to be known for, or what I would want my son or daughter projecting into the world, but they don't care. They just want this attention. And so the next one of these keys is integrity. Why is integrity so important for teens to have?
Well, the fascinating thing, Jesse, thank you for bringing that one up. Yeah. I was a little, first of all, I've written a number of books on moral intelligence and character education, but I wasn't expecting it to come up so high in resilience, but it does. And there's a reason for it, particularly when our kids become teens. You have to know what you stand for, because when push comes to shove and the peer pressure or the bullying start to rep in, you're going to not have the time to wiver and waver. You got to be able to say, here's what I stand for. And that's been instilled in you. And it's absolutely a glorious concept. I think we all have got to take a moment to say, what are we doing to instill character in our kids, particularly in a world where I think adults are behaving very badly? So it's, what are they modeling? Now, in that case, let's look at, what are they modeling? Because let me give you a couple of examples on this one. Something you can do Saturday with your family. I think it's one of the coolest things. I was in Tampa, Florida, and I was interviewing. I always love to interview the teachers. And I was asking the teachers, name some kid here that has integrity. And they all pointed, every one of them, on a one-on-one to the same kid. Would you go interview that kid and find out how she got to be such a kid with amazing integrity? Because you're not born with it, you acquire it. So I pulled this kid aside, absolutely wonderful girl. She's a senior, and I said, okay, Amy, every teacher says you are the kid with integrity. How'd you get that way? And she laughed and she said, quote unquote, it was how I was raised. I said, okay, how were you raised? And she said, okay, I'll tell you something that happened when I was 6, and you can still do it when your kid is 13, 14, 15, 17, or 25. My parents called us into the family room. Mom's on the floor with all these marker pens and chart paper, and Dad said, we're going to figure out what kind of family we want to be remembered for. What a great question. So Dad said, there isn't any right or answer, right or wrong, but we're going to start brainstorming. Mom's going to write them all down, the answers. And then after a certain time, we're going to run out of room. We're going to say time, bzz, and we're going to choose one. I said, so what did you choose? She said, the most interesting thing is we all chose honesty. I said, great, there's no right or wrong on this. I said, so how did you remember it? She laughed and she said, oh, it was impossible not to. Our last name is Duns. First of all, it became our family mantra. We're the honest Duns. Dad runs to the wood shop and starts making a huge plaque that said we're the honest Duns and puts it by the mailbox. Mom starts dropping us off at school. And every single day she dropped us off at school, she said, remember, we're the honest Duns. We do discipline. And my mom would say, was that an honest Dun thing to do? My parents said it so much, we became it. So,
very intentional,
and it's exactly how you form character. So I guess the question is, you know, what are you intentionally saying so often your kids become?
Yeah.
We know something else, Jesse. I love this. They've actually done some of the most phenomenal work on what creates an altruist. I mean, the good of the good of the holy good. And they interviewed hundreds of them. This was Samuel Olinder's study called The Altruistic Personality. And he interviewed hundreds of rescuers, and three things kept coming up. First of all, social responsibility and empathy were at the top, but all of them described how they were raised. And if you can remember the three E's, we'll have a whole generation of caring, wonderful, character-driven kids. The first one was expectation. It was expected in my home.
Yeah.
So, what do you expect? And if you asked each of your teens, what do we expect in this home? Can they instantly tell you? The second one was example. And most of the rescuers started quoting my parents. I'd watch my parents, and they were always the example of maybe it was honesty or kindness, and here's why. And the third thing was back to what we already talked about, experiences. We were required to give back. We were required to do service. And after a while, it became us. You act how you think yourself to be. So there you
So huge.
go.
And I think that's a really positive, optimistic thing when it's like, no, this isn't something that you're born with. This is something that you can impart to your children. And there isn't that expectation a lot of times. I'll
Yeah.
be honest, when I'm observing in public or families that we work with, a lot of times it feels like the kids are running the show and in control. And it's like the kids have the upper hand over the adults. Where it's like, nope, they can't get their kid to join a 15-minute Zoom call. They can't get them to clean their room. And in my mind, it's just like there was no choice when I was growing up. It was like, this is what your role in the family is you do the dishes and you take out the
Yeah.
trash, and we burnt the trash in Alaska back then. But it was like these are the things that are the expectations, and it wasn't up for debate. Do you feel like you see that sometimes? Like the
Yeah, I.
parents are letting the kids have more of the control, or like the upper hand and power and dynamic in the home?
You know, Jesse, yes, I do. And I think one of the reasons is when it's again, we love our kids desperately. We
Yeah.
feel so bad at what they've gone through. And I think what we've got to do is go back to the science. If you really want a successful child who's got solid well-being and confidence, go back to what Stanley Cooper Smith said. It's a balance scale. It's warmth on one side and love, but it's structure on the other. And it's a firmness. And it's got a balance. If you're feeling like you're this way or you're feeling like you're this way, it means you're doing too much. And you won't get the results from your child. So you just got to keep weighing the balance scale back up.
And every kid's different. Like your first kid, your second kid, your third kid, it's about like
Isn't that the
everybody's
truth?
more
It's Russian roulette on what you get with a kid and the
man, it
temperament.
is a lot of work. A lot of work being a parent. I
Yeah.
you made me think of something here. This conscious parenting, gentle parenting. Do you have a stance on that?
I have a stance on what the research says.
Okay.
So I
Let's
think,
talk about the research.
yeah, the above all else, what we do know is that there's too much evidence-based stuff. I mean, from the most brilliant guys in the world who have been studying this for quite a while, that have actually looked at self-esteem, for instance, which is we're all on the bandwagon and doing the wrong thing. And what they say is, once again, the parent usually has the confidence themselves, so it mirrors over. So, for instance, we're talking about the seven strengths of thrivers. One of the fastest ways to instill those is to model it yourself. But the other thing is, it goes back to structure. And you can't just alter it so much so that you give it all to your kids. It's got to be a balance scale, or you're going to find pretty much the kids in charge. And if you find the kids in charge, you're being too much of a pal, not the parent. You can be the pal later. Right now, you need to be the parent. You can listen actively. That is absolutely incredible. It's important to be empathetic in your listening, but it's also important to say, nope, this is what we stand for in this house, and it'll be better for your child in the end.
It's so good, and that's an area I see parents struggling so much with these days, of how much
Yeah.
do I be the friend and how much do I be the parent. And I'm having these conversations like, look, it is like such the greatest form of love for you to have structure, for you to have boundaries and rules. And because guess what, it's hard doing that. It is, but it's a lot better kind of hard than all of these problems that kids will begin to have when they just have the free run to do the things that they want to do, be on their phone 13 hours a day and have it affect their confidence and all these things that we're talking about. And so it's
Yeah.
like showing them you love them when you say no, when you don't let them go do that thing that's dangerous. And it's so powerful, but it's tough because they're doing it with the best of intentions a lot of time. They want their kid to be happy. They don't want them to feel the pain of getting their heart broken or failing at school or not getting playing time with the coach. So they swoop in and save the day, which seems to be doing more harm than good a lot of times. So
yeah, I agree with you. We are in sync.
Okay. Yeah. Curiosity. Talk to me about curiosity. Why is this one of the seven? That seems like a one that I wouldn't have expected.
Me either. Me either, Jesse. And I kept going over and over and over the research, and I kept waiting, why is this kept coming up? And the first thing about curiosity is that it's an openness to ideas and possibilities. So if you looked at what a thriver would do, a thriver doesn't pull up the white flag. They think of, what else can I do? What's my plan B? Which really means they're problem solvers. They're not Albert Einstein, so don't go thinking you have to make the most creative kid in the whole wide world. That isn't what it's at. But we want kids to know there's no problem so great that can't be solved. It's someplace in there, and it may not be the one that you got the whole round that you can do the 9 yards, but you can always do, particularly as a teen, what's your plan B? I know that you didn't do so well and you're really worried about it, but let's brainstorm what else you could do next time. And that's the piece that I think we're failing to do, is helping kids realize there's a next time. That's the piece that's resilience, because that's the piece that helps a kid bounce back from adversity.
Yeah. And if they don't have that and they're not able to, I guess, go and find that in their life, then there's nothing. That's the other thing. They're not learning to, like you said, the first month in college, and then they're bouncing back because they're the
first semester.
Yeah. They have to develop these skills along the way and be put in some of these situations that are out of their comfort zones and stretch them.
I love that. Stretch them. Because the other thing is, I think we've got to let kids know, and this is fascinating what teens say, they are worried about disappointing us. They're worried about failing us. So the first thing we've got to do is make mistakes permissible in our family. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to make a mistake. For heaven's sake, start owning up to yours. They already know we blew it, so you might as well say it. But how glorious to be able to model, but next time here's what I'm going to do instead. If kids realize that you made the mistake, and that mistakes are okay in the household, then you can bounce back. You know, Jesse, when I was writing Thrivers, I went to some of the most amazing places that you could possibly imagine, schools or, you know, businesses, to figure out what are they doing right. And I'll never forget going to MIT, Multimedia Lab, which is probably where the genius of the geniuses, I mean, Siri, artificial intelligence, driverless cars, name something, they're doing that there. And I spent the day there, and I was like, oh my gosh, these kids, and what they were doing was phenomenal. So I talked to the director of the program, and I said, how do you get such creativity? And he said, it's the philosophy and the environment. What you've got to first be able to tell kids, and I don't care what the age is, but the first thing when they walk into this school, they better know that failing is what we expect you to do. Because if you don't fail, it means you're not being creative enough. We want you to know it's okay to make the mistake. So what are you gonna do differently next time? And I'm going, oh my gosh, what a great environment.
Yes.
Phenomenal. They said, the other thing we gotta do is that the environment is more playful. I mean, they were playing with Legos as they were coming up with inventions that were phenomenal. There was a group that was actually creating a teddy bear that was huge that could talk to autistic children. And they were successful with it. It was just phenomenal. But I'm watching these kids as teens, adults, you know, but they were amazing. And they were also interacting with peers. They weren't doing it by themselves. They said creativity flourishes if you do it together, and it's more playful as an option. So I think those are the keys that we've got to do in school. I see them doing that with Genius Hour and project-based learning when they're getting makerspaces. If you can't do anything, you know, put together a table in your garage. That's what Steve Jobs' father did. Yeah. It was in his garage, and it was all the leftover gadgets, whether it be an old phone or a typewriter or an old computer, where he'd take it apart and try to figure it out another way to put it back together. Yeah. And it just relaxed him, but it also spurred on the creativity.
you fail your way to success. Anyone who has any
Yes.
life experience, or if you studied anyone that's successful, it's like, oh yeah, they had all these amazing successes, but there's hundreds and hundreds of things that they failed at along the way. You just don't
Yeah.
talk about that as much usually. So I love that. Fostering that environment, even celebrate. I've heard people that they're like, yeah, we celebrate it because we know, hey, well, what, like you said, what do we learn from this? What can we do to make it better and improve and have it
Yeah.
not be a negative thing?
You know, Jesse, what we've also discovered, NASA told us this. One of the biggest reasons why we curtail creativity, by the way, is highest around age 5, and then it just nosedives. NASA's been studying our children. Why aren't they as creative? Is always solving the problem for them. That's okay. Mommy will do it. That's okay. I'll make the phone call. Never do for your kid what your kid can do for themselves. If you want an independent kid, and that's actually what you're hoping for as a teen, go for it. You know, it's that's what you're looking for. So
I love
skill by
it. Prepare
skill. By
for
the
the
way,
road.
yeah, you can't do it all, but maybe this week you go, what's the one skill I'm always doing for my team? And then what you do is that you identify the skill and go to yourself, I'm never gonna rescue him again, but I'm gonna show him how to do it right. Maybe it's microwaving. How cool is that? Or starting the washing machine. There's some things like that. Show him while he watches. Then step back and do it together. Then really step back and say, now you show me. And once your child can do it, you say, you got it, sweetie, you're on your own. But it's skill by skill by skill. And that's how we raise up kids. I mean, you can't believe how many kids at college, the professors and the presidents are saying they don't know how to run the washing machine. They can't figure out how to start a coffee percolator going. It's just like, you know, oh my gosh, University of Chicago. University of Chicago, the president was going, you won't believe it. I'm sitting there and it's the orientation. These are some of the best and the brightest, and the mother's cutting the kids' steak. At lunch,
Unbelievable.
I'm going, step back, step back.
I got to make a shout out to a buddy of mine. I won't say your name, but you know who you are. We got to college. He didn't know how to crack an egg, and he didn't know how to make a cup of noodles. You just fill it up to the line with water and put it in the microwave. Didn't know how to do those things. Strong Italian mother, we love him. But it was really funny of like, yeah, if you're just gonna keep doing it for them, pretty soon you got to cut their steak as they're an adult. And that's
Yeah.
not what you want as a parent. You want them to have that independence. So,
Yeah,
okay, I
right
love it.
on.
This next one is one that I would think was on here. Perseverance. That
Yeah.
seems like such an important one. Talk to me about
Yeah.
perseverance.
Well, we know it's highly correlated to success. It's highly correlated to why does a spelling champion win the spelling bee? It's perseverance, not IQ. We also know that why they get through West Point. How do you get through the training that is the hardest training in the world? Perseverance. Now, it was Angela Duckworth's whose grit books
Oh,
figured that out with the research. But it is a wonderful thing that I think goes back to what does a persevering kid have? And the first thing we know, go back a minute, they have confidence. It's really hard to persevere when you're tanked in confidence, you're ready to give up. So see how these strengths amplify each other. It's not one that matters, it's a combination. The second thing you have to have for perseverance is self-control. Because self-control isn't just monitoring your stress level, it's monitoring your attention ability, Jesse. We know that. So those are the key points. Then you can help your child persevere. So don't go saying, why aren't you as motivated as you used to be? By the way, we're seeing a tank in that in schools as well. It's called the silent epidemic. They're just not as motivated as they used to be, but it's that perseverance piece. So what do? First of all, once you know that you got the confidence and you've got the self-control, you make sure that your expectations are, you mentioned it, beyond their comfort zone, but not so much that gets them into the panic zone. It's kind of
Okay,
like an
keep it balanced.
rubber band. Stretch them knowing what the expectation is, but don't stretch them so much you snap their spirit. You may need to find out from the teacher. What do you expect? How long should they be doing the homework? Should he be able to be capable of this particular page? And, you know, maybe get the tutor for that if it's really starting to struggle. Because a lot of times kids are doing their best, and after a while, the behavior tanks or the motivation tanks. But that's the first thing that's really critical. The second thing that's really critical is help them identify what their stumbler is. This was my piano teacher. Mr. White drove me crazy at age 6 because he made me do everything perfectly. And if I made one mistake, no matter where I was, I had to start the whole darn piece all over again. And man, did I hate music. And then my mother hired Mrs. Thompson, who was textbook perfect, because what she did differently is she'd say, Michelle, let's figure out what your stumbler is. What's the one little thing that's getting in your way? And I think that's what we may be missing with our kids. It's not the whole thing that's troubling him. It's the deadline, or she's worried about that particular problem. I can't figure out how to carry or do that math assignment. Once you zero in on what's the problem and work on, like Mrs. Thompson did, let's just work on that over and over again until we get it right, then go on and try and do it. That's what a really good coach does. They never said, you know, give up. You're never going to be a soccer player. Let's figure out the one thing that's getting in your way. And you can do that for perseverance, and it sure helps your kid.
Huge, huge. Oh, that's so good. I think that balance of stretching them out of their comfort zone, but not too far, is very profound and is easier said than done.
Oh.
Trying to weigh that. But there's so many kids. I would say there's an epidemic of kids who have never been out of their comfort zone, to the point of it's always been the perfect temperature. Like, the biggest hardship they've ever had to deal with is the Wi-Fi is a little slow and they're having a slow connection. And so getting them out, it's almost like an immersion therapy of like getting, you're scared to be around other kids. Let's get you in within reason. We're not saying you got to go up and speak at the state summit or the White House, but let's get you starting to interact and moving those things. So I love that so much, and it leads us to number 7 on our list here, which is an interesting one. I'm curious to hear what you have to say on this. Optimism, the positive attitude, being optimistic. Talk to me about that.
Well, optimism seems to come up over and over again as one of the reasons why depression is spiraling and anxiety is spiraling, because kids see things permanently or pervasively or personally as pessimistic. Now, I'm not saying raise a Pollyanna. That is not what this is all about, because we've got to have a reality base here that this is tough times. And you're right, this is a hard world that we're going through right now. But I think Martin Seligman was the one at University of Pennsylvania who did the best work, that if we're not careful, our children will develop hopelessness instead of hopefulness. And they'll just keep, what's the point? What's the bother? And then they give up, and there goes their thriving potential. When you look at that and you go, so what can I do? Because I'm telling you, all you have to do is turn the news on, and you want to go, why should we bother? And that's what's happening with kids. The first thing to be aware of is that teens' biggest concerns right now, they may not be telling you, but their biggest concern, says the research, is climate change and school shooting. This is a population of kids who are going to school with bulletproof backpacks. And the stories that they have on how concerned they are, and rightly so, because that's all they're seeing. The first thing is, be aware of the news. Be aware particularly of video-driven visual news. It's not as damaging of reading a newspaper, but the videos really do. You know, that's why those reporters are always saying the next few minutes are going to be, watch out, potentially damaging, and they are. Yeah. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I would say, go back to Fred Rogers. Oh, do I miss Fred Rogers? Because what he'd always do is say, do what my mom would say, show them the helpers. And I don't think we're doing that enough for our teens. One of the most amazing group, Jesse, was a group of kids from Long Island who said, we're so tired of the doom and gloom stuff that we convinced our superintendent to buy a plasma TV and put it in the opening quad. I went, what are you watching on the quad TV? And they said, don't worry, Dr. Borba, we're watching the good stuff. We tell her to put on news clips of good things that are happening in the world. And I actually saw, I'll never forget it, a group of teens walk into the opening quad of their high school, and they looked pretty stressed. They walked up to the plasma TV, saw the good stuff of, you know, in a crisis, any crisis, there's always the good folks. Are they seeing that? No. But what they did was they looked up, they put their arms around each other, turned and went, Yay, we got this and walked on going. That's exactly what it is. A final one little thing on this one is I love this research, Jesse. This is from NYU. What they did is they found that if you talk to your teen and tell them, you know, you're lucky, you're being raised in a resilient family, and they'll look at you like, what are you talking about? I said, not us. Think about way back when. Grandma, grandpa, your great grandfather, you know what they went through? The Depression, World War II, my gosh, and they resurrected, they came back. When kids begin to see themselves lucky to be part of a resilient family, they actually start adopting that mindset. So there's lots of things you can do. I mean, that chapter I think is one of the most important to read. But I think the first thing is to recognize that our kids are hurting and we need to help them.
It's so good. It's so good. I'm, you know, you've done all these different things over the course of your career, and I'm curious, what is one thing that you're most proud of from all these conversations, all these talks, all these books, all these hands you've shaken over the years? What's one thing for you that you're excited about when you think about it right now?
You know, thank you, Jesse. I'm trying, my brain's going a million miles an hour because there's so many
Just
cool things.
one, only
One
one.
of the things that's happening is that schools are adopting Thrivers as their central theme. And I walk in the school and there's Thrivers everywhere, in terms of the skills. But the most exciting thing that happened in one of those schools, it was in Temecula. I walked into it and I looked at it and I went, my gosh, this is amazing. What they did is they chose every day they're going to rehearse a skill. Okay. And they're going to rehearse the same skill all month long because it takes like a few minutes every day rehearsing the same skill. But what they did is they asked kids who wanted to be part of the Thriver Squad.
Oh
So the
my
Thriver Squad is a group of kids every day. They meet at lunchtime or once a week. And then what they do is they record how to teach the skill. So when I walk into the classroom, I've never seen so engaged kids because they're looking up at the smart board, and who's there? One of their peers who's teaching them how to calm down coolly. And
Yeah.
I'm going, this is absolutely brilliant. It's kids teaching kids. Highest correlation to thriving is a kid who has agency. It's a kid who
Yeah.
says, I got this. And what they did is they gave kids the voice, and the kids went with it.
In Temecula, of all places, that's where they're doing it right now. The Thrivers
Yeah,
Club.
the Thrivers Club, the Thriver Squad.
Yeah, the Thrivers Squad. Oh, that's so
Get it
good.
right,
Yeah,
Jesse.
get
Get
it
it
right.
right.
They'll find me. They'll come and get me, and they'll set me straight. Man, I feel like I know we need to wrap this up, but I can't not bring up this one thing because it's so heavy on my mind and heart lately. Social media, kids in the smartphones. What's your hot take or not so hot take? What are you seeing? What does the science say? Who's the researchers?
The science says, beware, parents. First of all, we are raising digital natives, and that is going to be part of their lives. But
Yeah.
if we're not careful, the digital devices, says the research, are actually fueling, particularly girls, teen girls, their mental health problems because they're get into a comparison mode. She's doing that, she's doing that, and I'm not. That fuels the depression. The second thing that we're discovering is that it really is reducing empathy because the longer you look at a screen, the less you're looking at a human being's face, and you do not learn empathy from an emoji. Says that was another kid who told me that one as
Third
well.
grader.
So it's like that's the key, and it's not a healthy habit. I don't care what your kid says, watch them. Watch them when they're doing anything. I don't care whatever the habit is. The longer they're at it, I'm talking a few minutes, are you seeing calmness come in and they're feeling healthier and you're looking healthier? That's a healthy habit. It's a, most parents are going, oh my gosh, it's not helping them at all. I said, you're right. So you start introducing other things. I would say beware because the research is clearly saying it's boosting anxiety and depression, and it's taking away the other thing. From family time with us. And you can't rewind that thing called interactions on a one-on-one with us. You only got this one time to do it right. I would say take advantage of it because our kids are really needing us right now.
Make the most of it. Yeah, it goes so fast. Well, I'm a thriver. Get me on the squad. I'm joining the thriver squad. Everyone needs to get this book. I appreciate you so much for everything you're putting out into the world. And like we said, like in the beginning, they aren't getting these things in school. But now, thanks to you, some of these schools are, and some of these kids are getting these things. So I appreciate you making the time for this. And I wanted to
Jesse.
ask you one final question. If
Oh.
you were going to go back in time, and you were going to give yourself one piece of parenting advice as you were starting your parenting journey, what would that be?
I think it would be just make the moment of be more responsive. Just find time to just don't worry about the flashcards and the baby Einstein, which is all out the door. Instead, just find fun moments because you're creating the memories. And those are the memories that seem to last a lifetime.
So good. Thrivers, everybody go read it. Thank you so much for your time. And I am
You.
so excited to see all the next things that you'll be cooking up in the next few years.
Thank you.